Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.
Good evening and welcome to Body Talk on Tuesday the 2nd of August. It's 2 minutes past seven and we're here till 8 o'clock talking about all things thyroid tonight. More after some music from the Kings of Leon. Good evening, you're listening to Body Talk in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital here on Phoenix FM. My name's Jules Battazzi and this evening we're talking about the thyroid. We have a consultant duet tonight, if that's what you want to call two consultants from either side of this medical and surgical spectrum. We're going to be discussing the important but little understood topic of thyroid disease. Both consultants are from Spire Hartswood Hospital and have been previous guests of mine, I'm pleased to say, on Body Talk. They've returned to the show tonight to help listeners understand more about thyroid problems and treatments available. So please welcome Dr. Eltayeb Marouf, who's a consultant endocrinologist, and Mr. Mreen Al-Sahare, a consultant surgeon. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
How are you?
Yes, we're very well, Jules, and thanks for inviting us back to your show.
Well, just thanks so much for coming back in. Let's start with you, Dr. Marouf. You're an endocrinologist, which means that you specialise in disorders of the endocrine system, which I understand means the various glands which regulate the chemical growth and metabolic functions in the body. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So can we start with the basics? Could you please, first of all, explain to us what the thyroid gland is and where it's located?
Right. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Jules, and thank Body Talks and Spire Hartswood for their invitation, and I'm very happy to come here tonight.
Thank you.
I'm also privileged, actually, to have my colleague, Mr. Sahari, who is an endocrine surgeon, and been working together at the Spire Hartswood for more than 10 years, and touch wood, I haven't had any problem for sending him patients. Right, the thyroid gland is one of the largest gland in the body, and by gland we mean that an organ in the body which produces hormone. So the thyroid gland is the largest one. It is very important gland because it produces hormones which control the metabolism and set the pace of the body reactions and so on and so forth. So it is a very, very important gland. It is located in front of the neck, and it's just beneath the box voice. Mm-hmm. And the word thyroid in Greek means shield. And so it looks like a shield or a butterfly. It has got two lobes, right and left, and there's a bridge in between them. As I said earlier, the importance of the thyroid gland is that it produces thyroxin and other hormones.
Okay, brilliant. I like the little visual description you gave us there of it looking like a shield. I've never actually seen a thyroid. So what can go wrong with the thyroid?
Well, as I said earlier, obviously the thyroid gland produces hormones. It produces thyroxin, mm-hmm. which is very important for the metabolism. It produces also other hormones like calcitonin, which is involved with the calcium metabolism. But tonight we're going to concentrate on thyroxin. What can go wrong with the thyroid? The thyroid could either produce too much hormones, and that is referred to you to as overactive or hyperthyroidism, or it can produce too little hormones, and this is referred to as underactive or hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. So these are the function of the gland. However, other things can go wrong with the gland, which is, for example, the gland can increase in size, and when it increases in size, it can that can be like a uniform increase in size, or it can be other forms of increasing in size, which I'm sure we will talk about later on.
Okay, so you've mentioned it can either be essentially underactive or overactive, to stick to the layman's terms.
Yes.
I would imagine that most people, all they would know about the thyroid is that it can make you overweight. That's generally the limit of most people's knowledge about thyroid, isn't it? So could you tell us a little bit more about what the symptoms might be of both an underactive and an overactive thyroid?
Right. And let us start with an underactive thyroid. The underactive thyroid is the common, and it affects mainly women as compared to men. And
typical. Just our luck, we get everything.
No, well, other things can affect men. Right, so it affects women more than men, and it is commoner than overactive thyroid. The common symptoms is that everything, because the thyroid doesn't produce enough hormone, so everything will slow down.
Right.
So it's slowing down. The bowel is slowed down, constipation.
Okay. Right?
The brain is slowed down, forgetfulness. Yeah, the metabolism slowed down, physical activity slowed down, weight gain.
Right.
Right. So it's and skin obviously is affected. So it affects most of the
presumably
tissues.
Periods as well. Presumably your reproductive cycle.
Of course.
Yes.
And the periods obviously during the period of time obviously they cause heavy periods.
Mm-hmm.
Right. These are the symptoms of underactive thyroid.
Right. Okay.
Right. Overactive thyroid, on the other hand, is just because due to overproduction of hormones, so the symptoms will be everything in a hurry, right? And you get, for example, the bowel, you get diarrhea, mm-hmm. weight loss, sweating, the heart is beating fast, palpitation, lethargy. All these are also the symptoms. So if you look at the symptoms, they are on the one hand with the low with the underactive it's a slowness, and with the overactive everything is in a rush.
Okay, that's a really nice way of putting it. Now you've mentioned that women can be more at risk of the underactive thyroid. So are certain people more at risk of either of them?
Yes. When I said women are most affected more than men with underactive, what I meant, obviously with all thyroid disease, women are affected more than men.
Okay.
All of them. Yes, and so...
Why is that out of interest?
Well, it is all related to the causation of the overactive and underactive thyroid disease. And this is all related to a group of disorders we call autoimmune disorders. And these autoimmune disorders are common in women mm-hmm. rather than men. Our immune system produces antibodies to, for example, against the germs, against bacteria, against viruses. In autoimmune disorders, the body produces antibody against its own tissue.
Right.
And these autoimmune diseases are the commonest cause of both overactive and underactive. Mm-hmm. If it's overactive, it's called Graves' disease. If it's underactive, it's called Hashimoto's disease.
Okay.
These are autoimmune thyroid diseases.
Right.
Right. Who does it develop over an underactive, or who is at more risk? Say, for underactive, is women, obviously, more than men. Second, women after delivery, they can develop problem with the thyroid. For underactive, you get people with, say, Down syndrome. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and people with Turner syndrome. These are congenital problem,
mm-hmm.
and people who are affected develop underactive thyroid more than people who are not who don't have them.
Okay, what about sort of, you mentioned after delivery, what about age or ethnic groups? Is there something in that as well?
Say, for example, Graves' disease affect people. That's an overactive thyroid, affect women mm-hmm. mainly between the age of 20 and 40. Underactive thyroid gland obviously can affect affect women, and but it's more frequent as people get older.
Right. Okay. So we've talked about what the symptoms are. Now, if what tests would normally be done? So we've established what the thyroid does. So now, if you've got something wrong with your thyroid, what tests are normally done to measure or confirm some kind of thyroid
well,
disease?
You see, although when I explained earlier, I said that two conditions, an underactive and overactive, are extremes.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, sometimes patients can come with symptoms of overactive, and yet when you do the blood test, they are overactive. So that is why we think that the most important thing before you start receiving treatment for this condition is to have the blood test. So okay. The blood test, so you having the symptoms only is not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
One should have the blood test. And in case of an overactive thyroid, one obviously will get excessive thyroxine or free T4. And also, there is another hormone, because obviously the thyroid gland does not produce thyroxine on its own. It needs prompting from the master gland in the body, the pituitary gland. So there is another hormone called TSH, which should be measured. So in overactive, high thyroxine and very suppressed TSH. In case of underactive, low free T4 and very high TSH. That's the diagnostic blood test we do. We also do, obviously, the antibodies, because the antibodies will tell us about the cause of the underactive or overactive.
Sure. Okay. So let's assume that you've run your tests and you've discovered there is thyroid disease. So typically, what treatment would then be offered to correct thyroid function?
Well, I suppose in case of underactive thyroid, obviously, you have to replace them with thyroxine.
Right.
And then you replace them with thyroxine, they need regular monitoring initially until they are adequately replaced, and then they could be seen every 8 months or a year. For cases of overactive, this is a bit tricky, but the treatment is three options. First option is medication, tablets.
Mm-hmm.
Second option is radioactive iodine, and third option is surgery.
Right.
I'm just putting them like that, but people like medication. Initially, when we diagnose people with overactive, we have to bring their blood test to normal. And how we do that? We do it by medication, and then we have got two medication: carbimazole and propioxyacin.
Mm-hmm.
And the treatment for this medication, for autoimmune hypothyroidism, is for 12 to 18 months with tablets. And then we stop the treatment, and if the tablets, if the condition remains stable, fine. If it relapses, then we think about other options.
Right.
And the other options are radioactive iodine and surgery.
Talk to me about the radioactive iodine. How does that work?
The radioactive iodine this is a brilliant idea. A physician more than 60 years ago thought about how, obviously, as you know, we can do surgery to the gland, take the gland out. So this physician thought about how can we chemically put the gland to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then they thought about obviously radioactive iodine, because the thyroid gland will, when you give radioactive iodine, the thyroid gland will selectively trap the radioactive iodine, and when it accumulates in the cells of the thyroid gland, it put the thyroid gland to sleep.
Right.
So you got rid of the overactivity without taking the gland out of the body.
Right.
Chemically. And this is one of the commonest sort of mode of treatment for overactive thyroid
interesting. So in terms of the medication, are there any downsides to taking long-term hormone treatment?
Of course. I mean, the taking high dose of anti-thyroid medication obviously can cause side effects. It can cause problem with the bone marrow or the factory which create the blood cells. It can cause problem with the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
It can cause problem with, say, for example, the gastrointestinal system. So they, in a high dose, the anti-thyroid medication can cause problem. That's why we don't use them long term in a high dose.
Okay.
And that's why we think about other options from there.
Body Talk, sponsored by Spire Hartswood Hospital in Brentwood, your local private hospital.
Yes, indeed, you're listening to Body Talk here on Phoenix FM, and that was Adele and Set Fire to the Rain, and that was a request for Marie Nal. You requested a little Adele, did you not?
Yes, I did, Jules, and thanks for playing it.
That's okay. Now, you're up now to be the second half of our double act this evening. We've got our very own Morecambe and Wise here in the Phoenix FM studios this evening. So, Dr. Maruf has been talking about sort of the medication, the ways we treat the thyroid disease, looking at medication, but obviously sometimes we have to look at surgery.
Yes.
Not all that often, but you're a surgeon, obviously, so how closely would you work with endocrinologists like Dr. Maruf?
Okay, as you know, Jules, I'm a consultant surgeon and have been working at Spire and also at Queen's for the last 10 years. One of my subspecialty interests and my major subspecialty interest is endocrine surgery, where I do a lot of thyroid and parathyroid operations. I am the lead thyroid surgeon for Queen's Hospital and also for the North East London Thyroid Cancer Network.
Okay.
Most of my referrals come from consultant endocrinologists, because with the thyroid gland, essentially, as a surgeon, as I see it, there could only be three types of problems. That is, one, either the gland could be over or underactive with no change in size. Secondly, the gland could gradually increase in size and get bigger, commonly called a goiter.
Okay.
And it's quite a common condition, but it's still functioning okay. And the third thing that could happen is a combination of both. So we run a joint endocrine clinic where every fortnightly, myself and a consultant endocrinologist, we see only patients who are affected with thyroid problems.
Mm-hmm.
And although it is a rare condition, it affects quite a lot of people. So that, and it, because it's so specialized, we do run a specialized clinic, so that because there is an overlap, patients could come in and see the two of us together so that we could formulate a correct management plan.
Right.
I get involved when, for example, if a gland is overactive and has been treated for about 18 months
mm-hmm.
with medication, as Dr. Maruf had alluded to before, and medications have their side effects. Sometimes patients don't tolerate it, and also when they do tolerate it, it's not something that you can continue long term. So they need a definitive cure. Yes, radioiodine is one way that we could avoid surgery. The thyroid gland selectively traps iodine, and therefore if there is if we make the iodine radioactive, then the rays that come out of that radioactivity gradually destroy the gland over a 3 or 6 month period. But it can still, there is a slight chance that it could recur in the future. And sometimes recurrences do happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some glands which are overactive are actually do not take up iodine. So there are conditions where radioiodine is not indicated. And of course, some patients sometimes will not want radioiodine if they have little children, for example, for other social issues. And then, of course, surgery is their only option. So for overactivity, yes, at times we would operate and take out the whole of the gland so mm-hmm. that it could never come back. And we simply replace the thyroxine that the gland secretes. And this is quite a simple thing to do.
You say that, but it sounds so complicated. You're taking out the biggest gland in the body and replacing it. How does that work?
That works quite simply. After we have taken out the gland, we start the person on a dose of thyroxine, which we feel would be reasonably there, depending on their body weight and how active they are. And thyroxine is a very slow-acting drug. It crawls up in your body. You don't have to, if you forget taking the tablet one day, it would not matter at all. If you take double the dosage the next day, it wouldn't matter at all. Over a 6 or 8 weeks' time, it builds up gradually a steady level in your body. And then we do a blood test. And the blood test will show us how to fine-tune it. And we would just either add slightly or reduce it slightly. And in most instances, we get this quite right in a short period of time. And after it's right, you only have to repeat the blood test once every 6 months or 12 months and adjust it if necessary.
So you're on that medication then for the
that's for the rest of your life. Because of course you haven't got a gland. The reason that we take out the whole of the is because some surgeons who were not specialists used to do that, but over the next 10, 15, 20 years the gland could again become overactive and increase in size, and a second operation on the neck is not the risk of complications are much higher. So these days, in the days of specialization, when we do this surgery day in, day out, we take out the whole of the gland so that it can never come back. And of course, replacing thyroxine is quite simple.
Okay. For patients, just to pick you up on that, for patients who have in the past had an operation where they've just had partial removal, does that mean they no longer need to take hormone drugs to regulate the thyroid?
It's not as simple, because even after partially the thyroid gland has been removed, we check their bloods, or we should. And the rest that is there may not be enough. Sometimes the bit that is left may be too much. Or simply, sometimes the bit that is left is not enough, but on the other hand, the pituitary gland may be driving it so hard that it will get bigger and bigger in size. Mm-hmm. So to avoid all that, it is best to take out the whole of the gland. Of course, in the past, people did think that leaving a bit of the gland will prevent someone from taking medication for life, but the risks and the other problems that it creates with leaving a little bit of gland is far greater than having to take the medication.
Sure, okay. All right, let's talk about the operation itself. Because it does sound like, obviously, it's quite a drastic operation. So is it a major operation? Is this weeks in hospital? How is it done?
Okay. Right, Jill, now first let me go through it when we do the operation. First is if an overactive gland. The second reason when we would do an operation on a thyroid gland is if it is just simply hugely enlarged. It may be functioning still okay, but because it's so big, it can press on vital structures, like it can press on the windpipe or make it narrow, and then breathing would be difficult.
Sure.
Or it presses on the esophagus and then swallowing is problematic.
Yeah.
Or simply it's very unsightly or it's uncomfortable, it's painful. Now all these things are more pronounced if, for example, part of the gland enlarges in the neck and part of it actually goes into the chest, that is underneath the collarbone. Now if that happens, although in the neck the gland could increase in size and there is space outside, once it goes into the chest is a bony cavity. When it increases in size, it presses on things much more, and the operation is also much more difficult. So that's another reason why we would operate.
And just to say at that point, you were saying off air a minute ago that sometimes you've had them and they've been, what, 4 pounds in weight?
Just to
give an indication of how big they can get.
Yes, considering that it's only sort of between 18 to 30 grams or so to become 4 pounds is a huge, huge increase.
Huge, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
The other reason that we would also operate is sometimes if there is a new growth in only one area of the thyroid gland. Now, as Dr. Maroof has alluded to, that the thyroid gland has got two lobes. It's shaped like a butterfly, and the right and the left lobe. Occasionally, we would find that there is a nodule in one of those lobes. And although we have got various tests which will tell us what it is likely to be, sometimes we do have to take out possibly either the whole or part of the gland to make certain that we know exactly what it is. Because all the very, very rare, it could be a growth which is cancerous.
Right.
So now we will talk about that more later on, but essentially what an operation, a thyroid operation, entails. It is, of course, a major operation, but we are getting better at it. Mm-hmm. And these days, believe it or not, patients are admitted on the day of operation. They have their operation and they're discharged home the next morning. It's about a 23-hour stay, as we say it.
That's pretty impressive for such a big thing, isn't it?
In fact, if the operation's done in the afternoon, which I do at the Spire Hartswood, then patients will come in sort of about 2 o'clock, have their operation about 4-ish. It takes about a couple of hours, and they'd be home next morning about 10 o'clock.
Fantastic.
Now, the operation is carried out by a sort of incision, a transverse incision in the skin crease of the neck, which is roughly about 5 to 8 centimeters. It's not a very big incision. Mm-hmm. And through that, we can gain access to the thyroid gland. And these days, we use a special ultrasonic scissors, which helps us to reduce blood loss and also damage to tissues, and helps in speedy recovery. It takes about a couple of hours to complete an operation.
Sure.
Mainly because there are many vital structures in the neck which we have to very meticulously identify and preserve. There is the two things that we always look for and preserve. There are two nerves which supply the voice box. And the thyroid gland is intimately related to the nerves, and we handle the nerves and we dissect the thyroid gland off from the nerve. Of course, this is something that we preserve, because if that nerve is cut or damaged, then your voice would be hoarse. And
you must have such steady hands.
We have got very good results, and in our last 12 years of operating, there has only been 2 such happenings. But normally, although it's considered to happen 1 in every 100 operations, in our hands it's less than about 1 in 500 operations.
Fantastic.
So we preserve that nerve very meticulously. Mm. And then we also very intimately red glands. And these glands are the size of a rice grain. They're difficult to identify. But because we do so many, we can now identify and preserve them. And that maintains your calcium level. So that's the reason it takes a bit long. But certainly, it's not a painful procedure. We glue the neck, so mm-hmm. there's no stitches to come out.
Okay.
And you can eat and drink the same day, and you're home the next morning.
That's brilliant.
So that's what it entails.
That's fantastic. Now, you mentioned you're using glue, obviously, for the scar, and you do it on one of the folds in the neck anyway. So presumably, in terms of scarring, I would say minimal scarring, probably.
Yes. The neck heals very well, because there's lots of blood supply in the neck. Mm-hmm. And normally the neck, in about 5 days, initially the scar is slightly noticeable and red. But in about 6 months' time, it will become like a skin crease. And unless it's not noticeable, unless you point it out, people would not notice the scar at all.
Fantastic. Okay, that's brilliant. We're going to have a quick musical break, and then we'll be back with Mr. Sare and Dr. Maroof. You're listening to Body Talk on Phoenix FM in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital. My name's Jules Batazzi, and we are talking thyroid. We're here with Dr. Maroof and Mr. Sare. And gentlemen, I'd like to ask you both to chip in there. Just first of all, what's the long-term... We've talked all about what a physician will do, what a surgeon will do. What's the long-term outlook for patients having hormone treatment or surgery for thyroid disease?
Well, as I said earlier, I have got patients who are on long-term oral medication, but they are on the lowest dose of the oral medication. Obviously, one would not be happy to leave somebody on a higher dose, mm-hmm. because of the side effects of this medication. With radioactive iodine, we know that the complication or the side effects are that people will go underactive and they will need their thyroxine replacement for good. And we also know that there is a small percentage of people who will have an overactive thyroid gland again. With surgery, obviously, as Mr. Sahara said earlier, if there are no immediate complication, then I think that surgery, obviously, long term, there isn't anything.
Sure.
If somebody is going to develop any complication, they would develop it early. I want to mention something about radioactive iodine. There are certain conditions, obviously, certain situation where radioactive iodine is completely contraindicated.
Right.
Like, for example, in pregnancy, okay, we do not give radioactive iodine, and for children, obviously, there is no radioactive iodine.
Sure.
For people who's in incontinence, urine incontinence, or fecal incontinence, or people with severe mental disorder, mm-hmm, obviously, radioactive iodine is contraindicated because obviously of the fear of one will be worried or concerned about the hazards to the public. So one has to be careful.
Sure. Okay. All right. We haven't spoken about thyroid cancer. I don't think there's a very high awareness of this cancer. Now, the Cancer Research UK website states there are just over 2,000 people in the UK diagnosed with thyroid cancer each year, which obviously makes it quite rare. Would either of you be able to comment briefly on diagnosis and treatment of thyroid cancer?
Okay, Jules. Thyroid cancer is one of the rare cancers. It only affects about 2,000 people in the UK yearly. And if we consider all cancers together, thyroid cancers only make up 1% mm-hmm of all cancers.
Sure.
Now, it is three times as common in women than men. Disease is more common in
sure
women. It's probably that is the reason. But the good thing about thyroid cancer is that with adequate treatment, we can cure it completely. We can almost certainly, for all cases, there's over a 90% cure rate. That's to say that your life expectancy will not be at all shortened.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for the other people, when recurrences do happen, we can still treat them adequately. So, although it is termed as a cancer, it is one for which we really do have adequate treatment.
Okay.
But the important thing is to seek medical advice early.
As always, catch it early. Yeah.
Thyroid cancers almost invariably will be in a gland which is enlarged in size.
Mm-hmm.
That means it would be, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, there is either a nodule that in the neck which can be easily seen,
mm-hmm,
or felt, or if examined by an expert, it can be identified. Certainly, we occasionally these days we are also picking up some enlarged thyroid glands which otherwise might not have come to our notice because the patient has had either a CT scan or an ultrasound scan for an unrelated condition,
okay,
which has then picked up a sizable nodule but the patient hasn't actually felt.
Right.
And of course, there are certain characteristics that always make us worry. That is, if someone has only a single nodule and if we find that nodule is not taking up iodine, then there is some worry.
Mm-hmm.
When we do an ultrasound scan, which is an investigation that is very commonly done, on an ultrasound scan, if there are certain characteristics that it's a solid, complex nodule, there is more blood flow in that area, there is some microcalcification, there are well-established factors which would make us worry. And of course, with everything these days, if we put in a needle. Now, it only helps if the needle test is positive. If it's negative, it's of no help to us. Occasionally, if we get a very good sample and it can conclusively say that area of the thyroid gland, there is nothing serious. But of course, we can't take the whole nodule. So the second test is the ultrasound scan that we do. And the third test, the needle test, is called a fine needle aspirate.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, after all this is done, patients who are suspected that it could be a growth, and especially if the growth has come on recently and it's increasing in size, we then discuss it in a multidisciplinary meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we discuss all the imaging, and then a group, the multidisciplinary group, then sort of advises as to what would be the best course of action. And of course, sometimes it would be that we would watch and see and again repeat the investigations. But at other times, we do go in and operate and take out that side of the thyroid gland where the nodule is, or if there are lots of nodules but one nodule is what we call a dominant nodule that is bigger than others, then in that case we probably would take out the whole of the gland. And of course, once we have taken it out, then we could do a full histological evaluation and look under the microscope. And if it so happens that there is a growth which is cancerous, then what we do is we look at the type of it, whether we have, in most cases, almost invariably, we would have removed it completely. And although when we take out the thyroid gland, there could still be some microscopical cells going around or in that area, which then we would treat by radioiodine ablation. Mm-hmm. And certainly by this combination, we can almost certainly cure the vast majority of patients. And then the patients will of course go on thyroxine tablets. But in the case, if it proves to be a cancerous growth, then we would give a little more thyroxine than normally is required, which is called a suppressive dose. And that then makes certain that even if there are one or two glands, they will one or two little cells that are there, they won't function.
Okay.
And with a combination of all this, we can almost invariably cure everyone.
Fantastic. Good. Okay. All right. Can I ask each of you now to give me a top tip on how to maintain a healthy thyroid gland?
Well, before I do that, Jules, I would like to say one the message. Send a message. I know that a lot of people obviously go and see their GPs and they go and have an ultrasound scan of the thyroid and they tell them that they have got nodule in the thyroid and they get worried. What I want to say is that, I mean, if the ultrasound scan showed the nodule, I don't think one should lose his sleep over this.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
I think as Mrs. Haru alluded to earlier, cancer of the thyroid gland is extremely rare.
Sure.
So it is not a common at all, and even if it is cancer of the thyroid, it is the prognosis and the of cancer of the thyroid is extremely good, and the cure rate is very high. I think if you want to maintain a good thyroid, I think you have to follow the just lifestyle modification, diet, exercise, and I'm sure that everything will help the thyroid to maintain its integrity and hormones and so on.
Okay, Marina, what about from you?
Yes, well, Dr. Maruf has said about the medical side as to how to keep healthy. And of course, yes, these days our general diet contains adequate iodine and things that we need to maintain a healthy thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
However, I would stress something as well that most of you would never need anything, or nothing will go wrong with our thyroid gland. The vast majority of us, nothing ever goes wrong, and it's absolutely fine. But for the minority, when there is something wrong with the thyroid, and especially if it comes to surgery, then one ought to choose a surgeon carefully. Mm-hmm. One who, a lot of the time, these days, we are all very, very subspecialized, and complication rates with people who do this procedure all the time is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And also it is likely that if you see a team, a surgical and an endocrinologist team, who are dealing with this problem day in and day out, you are likely to get the right treatment at the right time.
Excellent advice. And we can recommend that people go onto the Spire Hartswood Hospital website to find out just the man who's sitting right in front of me now, if they are in that situation. Gentlemen, we are out of time. Thank you so much for coming in tonight and talking about all things thyroid. It's been lovely to have you both back. I hope you'll come back again another time.
And thank you, Jules.
Lovely. You're listening to Body Talk in association with Spire Hartswood Hospital here on Phoenix FM.